Blog Talk Radio.
See the light. We're going to stand up for our rights. What's happening, everybody? I'm Citizen Payne. This is Kay's son and friends. I'm Kay's son. That's my mom's. I'm Kay Thompson. That's why I do this talk. And this is Kay's son and friends with my boys, Byron Saunders, the legendary historian, Wayne Gilman, the legendary newsman. And a lot of stuff went on this week. If you've been watching the news, paying attention to society, culture, human interests, a whole bunch of stuff went on. Joe Biden was in Georgia the other day. But let me start with the beginning. We'll talk about the politics and stuff. I got to talk about the passing of a couple of people. First, my Uncle Everett. My Uncle Everett Felder. Everett E.T. Felder, who passed away. He was a good friend of my family. Was the person, I believe, that registered my father. Was part of the first chapter of the NAACP. Here in New Jersey with my father and my uncle. I believe the chapter that they were a part of here, the Oranges, and is the third oldest in the country, NAACP chapter, and maybe the oldest in New Jersey. And my Uncle Everett was a creative person. He was had a number of careers, but he was a TV director. And he started my mother's career and television, being on-air host down at Channel 47, and put her in a commercial, as my sister Lisa told me back in the day, started her out being a Chick-fil-A commercial and things like that. And anybody that's familiar with my mother's career in broadcast radio and as an on-air talk show host, Uncle Everett Felder was responsible for helping her to begin that career. And also, like I said, actually knew my father longer than my mother. He was also an actor, a member of SAG and AFTRA, and he was always around, someone who was supportive of my career and the arts. And I was able to put him in a film, the film Drop Squad, which I was an associate producer as well as acting in it with my partners, executive produced by Spike Lee. And if anybody's seen The Drop Squad, it's kind of a kind of an absurdist storyline about a fictitional, or maybe not, fictitional group of black revolutionaries that goes around and kind of snatches members of the community that are doing things that are anti to the progress and the development and the fullness and enrichment of their community. And they are basically talked to for a number of days, deprogramming and restoration of pride. That's Drop Squad. And so within the course of this movie, this one particular individual target of the Drop Squad is an ad executive man. Give you a little shades of Putney Swope, but he's an ad executive man that is helping to promote, this is in the early 90s that the film came out, helping to promote negative images of black people throughout the airwaves and products being sold. And so his climb up the corporate ladder is getting too much for his family members, and they call the Drop Squad on him. And so the last straw is when he creates a fictional fried chicken commercial. And in the fried chicken commercial, I think General Otis' fried chicken commercial, and the concept was that the black people like slaves, and you know, like field hands that are working drive window working there, the ones that work at the register were kind of lighter skinned to indicate that they were house Negroes, and they redid it in the worst possible taste. So this individual gets picked up by the revolutionary group, the Drop Squad, and that's how Spike appeared in that commercial that was in the movie. And I was able to cast Uncle Everett as someone who, you know, part of the, you got to watch the commercial. I'm going to post it on my social media, but it talks about, you know, and even at General Otis's fried chicken joints, there's verses of scripture printed on the napkins. So in this one particular clip, you know, my Uncle Everett is there, he's eating a piece of chicken, and he's liking it, and he reads the napkin, and he looks up to the sky like, thank you, Lord. And the moment, and he understood the context, and Uncle Everett played it exactly perfect. And that's why it was one of the featured moments. People, it's part of the trailer for the commercial for the movie, for the overall movies. And he really hit the beat in the moment, and I was real happy that he was able to be there. And I remember getting calls from him, and he would talk about getting residual checks. So that was something that was really made me happy to do that for him. And so I want to, he passed about two and a half weeks ago. So, and his funeral was Friday. So I wanted to take a moment and shout out that person in my life that was creative that directly affected me, as well as the one and only Mr. Portier, Mr. Sidney Portier. I, like many black people across this country, and the brothers will talk about, was greatly affected by the work of this dignified black man who chose not to take, you know, he wasn't in the black exploitation movies, right? I mean, Sidney was there, he was a little bit older, but he probably could have made a lot of money. You know, nowadays you see some actors, and I don't think anything's wrong with it. They make black movies, and they make movies for their larger crossover demographic audience. Mm-hmm. Mr. Sidney, he came on the scene and he had a crossover audience. And he reminded me not of the stereotypical images that I saw America try to force on us as black men, but he reminded me of the black men that I grew up with that raised me, of dignity and respect and intellect and all of those positive things that he expressed. And he made a conscious choice, if anybody, I'm sure everybody knows some of his quotes, he made a conscious choice to play those dignified characters and never to take something. Even his comedies, you know, Uptown Saturday Night, Let's Do It Again, were celebrations of the black community, but they weren't him and cause. They weren't stereotypical black characters, you know. There are other characters in the movie who probably could have been considered stereotypical or just maybe regular black folk, you know. I mean, stereotypes are made when you take one example of a group and think that identifies the entire group. So, you know, Sidney Poitier, for all of us, represented so much more, you know, when you're like the only black kid or one of two only black kids in the class, and class is watching the movie To Serve With Love, you know, it does something for you. You know, it gives you a little boost. So to the great Sidney Poitier, I had a couple of, I was around him a couple of times. My buddy Kadeem Hardison did a short-lived sitcom show with his daughter that is his namesake, Sidney. And I went to the set one day and I saw the legend, Sidney Poitier, the legend, come out of a one room and go into another room down the hallway. And I did not take the opportunity to catch up with him to say hello. But I believe I did get an opportunity to speak or at least say hello to him. I went to see a play a friend of mine was in, and somehow he was, Mr. Poitier was associated with the production company, and he was there. It was really good for her to have Sidney Poitier watch her act. I think my buddy and I that went to see the play were able to catch up with him outside and just almost say a brief hello, you know. Words of the wise, if you ever had those opportunities, everybody, don't pass up on them, you know, when God puts you in those places to meet those people and make those impressions. So those are a couple of the people that have gone by for me that have been very, very influential in my life. And just reflecting, you know, Sidney Poitier gave us a positive black man image to look on when we watch TV. And I can just imagine that a lot of people that perhaps didn't have that in their home, I had it in my home in spades, you know, my dad, my uncle. But a lot of people who grew up with a single parent, their mom only, I hope that Sidney Poitier was able to give them that positive image of African-American masculinity and just what a decent person with integrity. I'm going to try to get my buddy Dennis Hines, whose mother was Teresa Merritt. If you ever saw the show, That's My Mama, that was Mrs. Hines, an accomplished actress back in the day. But Dennis was a child actor, and he was the little kid in Buck and the Preacher that has a scene with Harold Belafonte. And he posted something on his social media about working with Mr. Poitier and Mr. Belafonte, and it was really cool. Before we get into the other stuff, I know Brother Byron and Wayne want to talk about the effect of Sidney Poitier on them. So let's bring in the legendary historian, Brother Byron Saunders. If you give us a little historical lesson. You know, B.
My brother, indeed, the icon, the gentleman theory, the concept, not only a gentleman and a man of strength. Because in that scene, they call me Mr. Tibbs. You know, white man slaps him, and he slaps him back almost instantaneously. Like, that scene alone set the precedent. That was a hallmark piece of moviedom, history made. Because prior to that time, Eric, that was never seen, stage, screen, not even in radio drama. Okay, and you don't see nothing in radio drama, but you would have never even had the opportunity to hear that a black man, not the white man.
You wouldn't even have heard it.
It just wasn't about to be done. So yes, and like you, my Sidney Poitier moment happened to have been at the Hilton Hotel in New York City. It was the 50th anniversary of Ozzy and Ruby. I had an invite from Ozzy and Ruby to be there. And it was wonderful because on the dais was Sidney Poitier and Hank Aaron and Billy Aaron. And it was a who's who there. So I'm there with my dear friend who was a talent agent at William Morris, okay? And she and I went because my wife was expecting my first child. She couldn't go, so she's 8.5 months pregnant and couldn't be able to make it. So this dear friend of ours said she'd go with me. Now, her being an agent at William Morris Agency was really one thing. Now, with wonderful event, get a chance to talk to everybody. Hank and Billy Aaron, I went up to them and able to talk to them. They were so happy to see somebody from Atlanta that it was like nobody was talking to them. But on the way out, Sidney Poitier was standing in the lobby of the Hilton Hotel waiting for his transportation. And as we were getting ready to leave our show, my dear friend, I can't think of her name right now, but she says, you know, I might work at William Martin Agency, and he's been a member there, and I've never met Sidney Poitier. I said, really? You've never met him? Walked straight up to him, Eric, and said, Sidney Poitier, I'm Byron C. Saunders. This is my dear friend, so-and-so. She works at William Martin Agency, and she's so happy to meet you. He was the gentleman to the perfection of being acceptable, pleasing to talk to. He was in a tuxedo already, so he had that quintessential, you know, Sidney Poitier look, and it was the perfect, perfect moment of introduction because he didn't back away. He didn't shy away. He was so accommodating. And those are the kinds of things that we remember about our icons, you know? Very important that you want you, like you said, when you have that opportunity, don't be shy. Seize the moment. And speaking of which, because having that, what you just revealed, Eric, right now, politically, we have more power than we have ever assessed in the 400 years that we've been here. This is our next 3 months. If we can't get a Voting Rights Act through, this is Black History. We've got Martin Luther King's birthday. We've got Black History Month. We've got Women's Month. I mean, we just keep rolling. We better do what we got to do right now. As you remember, to go when I started the show about watch night service, what was the message? It's all about freedom. Go claim your freedom as African Americans right now. We're being attacked. This is another civil war. This is no play game. This is no virtual game, people. This is real.
Yeah, you know, it is an opportunity that's on us right now. You know,
yeah.
And thinking about those times when you had a, you know, what the images that are coming to mind now for me are the March on Washington images. And Sidney Poitier and Harriet Belafonte being there supporting, coming out supporting the rights of black people. I remember a quote of his that I saw him being interviewed when I was living in California. And he said, I believe this, and I wrote it down. I believe it goes when he said, I realized, and asked him about his life. He said, I realized that my dreams were as valid as I was willing to make them. And
right.
I was so very astute and so very insightful. And it just summed up what, I mean, because who would have thunk that you look at America in that heyday, in his heyday when he rose up, and you would never have thought that America would have had a black guy like that at that particular time. Like you said,
right.
The slap was something that everybody watching it, even if you were sitting at home.
Oh, my God. Exactly. And so, yeah, you're right. And see, the importance of that, Eric, is that seeing us in the position of standing up against the oppressed and oppression in the South. Because remember, that movie didn't take place in
not
the
only,
North. That was in a southern town.
But not only that, in a position of authority and power. It wasn't just standing up.
Power.
This was a black man coming that had equal position and authority as the
right
tiger. Remember, there was a scene, which is one of my favorites, and my former cop squad partner, even more favorite than slap, is when I think it's Rod Tiger's character, when he comes down and was trying to talk trash to Sidney and said, what do they call you up there? What do they call you? Black cop, nigger cop, blackie, blackie, blick, 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 blackie, blip. He says, they call me Mr. Tibbs.
Oh, Mr. Tibbs.
So me and my boy, the inner monologue of the 70s of nowadays, which would have been, they call me Mr. Tibbs, mother. Replayed it over. What do they call you? Black cop, nigger cop. No, they call me Mr. The way he said it.
Let me tell you.
Bow down, you know?
Yes.
So
and that, you know, even now when I look back at his films, the ones that he played, the spy versus spy. I mean, he played every character role you could possibly think of. But when I go back and look at A Raisin in the Sun, by the way, my friend was Joan Field, and she's a historic figure because she was one of William Morris's top black agents, okay? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, right, exactly. So this was like a nobody. But anyway, when I go back and look at A Raisin in the Sun, oh, my. That comment about himself as a man trying to explain to his sister and his mother and his wife, but in the end she says that woman right there is going to be a doctor. I mean, to a declaration of resolve, taking over. This is what we got to do, Eric, right now. It is about resolve time. There's no more time for talking and yakking and kumbaya. And this is take it and seize it and go get it right now.
Yeah. You know,
on behalf of Sydney.
Parallels that you're drawing between those days when we remember heads like us that were older now, those days, those of us at the end of the baby boomer generation or whatever previous generation is still around, those days for our people were ones of, when we were young, constant, the constant threat of the oppressive force of white America, white supremacy. And so now, these years later, that I think that a lot of the young people don't really realize it's still, you know, unfortunately, we're still struggling. And as I said before, as people gain knowledge or gain life, you realize that this struggle, maybe as a young person, you're like, oh, hell, I'm not going to be dealing with this when I'm for the next 30 years. And you look up 30 years later, and there's still remnants of this society, this system that we're fighting against. And you understand now, just in these last 10 to 15 years, I understand the progress, the struggle that we've had in this country for these 300 years. And if you look at these individuals and how they responded to the president's speech in Georgia, this is a country that was developed with a particular objective. And that was that apparently that it was to be reigned over by white male landowners, wealthy white men. And it is something that they perpetuated ever since. The Electoral College is a reflection of apartheid. Saw someone tonight on one of the shows talking about, you know, on Joy's show, talking about, you know, people live in Montana or in these very conservative states have as much power as the people that live here on the East Coast, where there might be 50, 60 million people. You have areas of the country that have maybe 2, 3, 6 million people, and they have as much say-so as people that live in these more populated areas, a form of apartheid that was put into the system. The Electoral College, the form of apartheid, in my personal opinion, when you claim to be a democracy, one person, one vote, majority rule by vote, by democracy, and you put in these mechanisms in place where that really doesn't count. That really is not going to vote. But, oh, wait, there's a caveat to that. There's this one loophole that you have to check, which is what the filibuster is, right? And we see that these individuals that have such outrage, Mitch and Mitt, such outrage, calling Joe Biden's speeches the worst thing, or Romney said compared to Trump's, it becomes even clearer. It should become clear to any thinking individual that this is part of their plan. And they're fighting like hell to preserve that set-up plan of white male wealthy people running the country. And you see it in the way they speak. Mitt Romney was running for his life on January 6th the wrong way if the brother hadn't said, hey, you better come around this way. And I just played in my mind the two images side by side of him having the gall to say that what Joe Biden did put him in the category of Donald Trump. And then the other side was playing him running for his life away from a mob that was sent down there by Donald Trump to put a hit on that body. So if that is the case and these people are still willing to ignore that, then clearly they have an objective. Their objective is to perpetuate white supremacy at all costs. And the fact that they lie and make a, you know, people are, I see these talking heads so surprised that they're lying. And how can they do this? This is what they've been, this is how they built the company, the country. What are you talking about? How can they continue to lie? The whole shit is a lie. It's all made up system for people. Well, this is nothing new.
And here's the thing, Eric, the irony of it all is that to listen to a Mitch McConnell defending why he can't engage in even having a conversation about the most pristine matters of a democracy, which is voting, and then to defy, because the filibuster, like it is not a rule, it was just put in to accommodate, once again, a minority. like the three-fifths rule, once again, based on white superiority.
Mm-hmm.
And you're right. And you cannot deny it, because every time it has been used, it has been used to deny equaling the playing field with people of color. The only time.
Right.
Okay. They pointed it out. It's been used so many times in the last year, couple of years, that during the Trump administration, the filibuster was done almost 200 times. To do what?
Because
it wasn't equal level in the playing field. But once again, you're right. And this is why it's important to understand the context of history, so that people realize when we're talking about this as a person of color, we're not just blowing smoke up from up your proverbial noses just to accommodate your willingness to run this paternalistic white superiority complex that you have over people of color anywhere in the world, but yet alone in a most pristine part of our democracy is majority rule, and that's one man, one vote. Because as I understand, in all the states that are passing the anti-voting laws, it's done by will of majority, not filibustering, by 50-plus one vote.
Right, they gain majority.
That's how democracy runs.
Right.
So when you're talking about a filibuster and then a three-fifths rule, then you, all of a sudden you're accommodating not the one rule, one man, one vote rule. You're accommodating somebody who wants more power because they don't have enough people. Well, welcome to Washington, D.C., the country's last plantation, where we do not have that right that Montana has.
Let's put it.
We got 450,000 people
let's here. There, Byron. Let Wayne jump in here. He's joined us this evening. Wayne Gillen,
okay.
Legendary newsman.
Hey, greetings, gentlemen, and forgive my tardiness, but I get the drift. I was trying to pick it up in the car. It just saddens me the way things are going. I mean, it's so apparent. We talk about this. We've been talking about this the last 10, from the inception of this program. Everything has been predicated on the issues of race and racial animus in this country. And that's what it's all about. I mean, the thing is, in about another 10 to 20 years, there won't be the white influence in terms of numbers. The people of color would have taken over, and you have people from countries that are, running away from all sorts of conflict in their home turf, adding to the population in the States, and they're adding to the color. And so therefore, it's just funny that it is taken, and I happen to like Joe Biden. I thought the speech yesterday was important, but I also feel in one breath it was much too late, I don't know if we're going to achieve all the things that we need to achieve, but the bottom line is it is time to get rid of all this antiquated nonsense that we have been living with. Whether it was one of the concepts of the Founding Fathers, if it doesn't apply, remove it. Vote on it. You just mentioned the Electoral College. I mean, that cost us, when I say us, I speak as a proud Democrat back in 1999, 2000. I think that was an issue there. It was obviously been an issue prior to that. The filibuster is another issue. The deal is that it should be about majority rule. If you don't like what goes on, then you have the right to leave, as far as I'm concerned. But no one seems to be willing to even show any kind of reasonableness in the Republican Party. I mean, no matter how many times you show film clips of the insurrection, they come back and say somebody doctored that tape. Fauci yesterday, Dr. Fauci was before a Senate committee testifying on the status of what's going on with the COVID issue. And you have Ryan Paul, who I understand he said under his breath, called him a moron. I mean, when you sit there and you listen to the verbiage coming from some of these people, you wonder, how the hell did they get elected? Who do they represent? And the thing is, not just a matter of who they represent, even if their constituency is afflicted by some of the same problems that we have, somehow they've managed to convince them that if you stay the course and you uphold whatever nonsense that they've been spewing all these years to maintain elective office, that things will get better. And even a blind man could see that it won't, you know. So it's frustrating. But I'd like to, you know, I hope that at some point that there is some, you know, at least come to their senses and just allow this process to go through and to continue. And, yes. and one other point as I think of all this, I wanted to throw a brick at my television set this morning. I just happened every once in a while to tune into Joe Scarborough. I don't even want to be part of his daily demographic, but, you know, he'll have my man Sharpton on and a few other people I know. And he mentioned something with a reference that was made by Biden yesterday, and he said it in such an underhanded manner that, you know, Bo Connor and his history should be respected. I you know, I sat there and I said, you know, Wayne, you know, I just got up, you know, it's like 7:30, 8 o'clock. Maybe I didn't hear this correctly, you know, and I wish I had the ability to play it back, but you know, it's those talking heads that don't seem to pass the lit test with me. You know, the and I'm not saying reform Republicans who have seen the light, not all of them, or painted with a broad stroke, but every once in a while you hear crap. And he's from the South. He represented, you know, Florida for many years. I question sometimes where his thinking is at.
Well,
And the showboating that goes on, but that's just my myopic opinion.
Oh, yeah, I noticed the same thing about him. And I watch that show in the morning because it does give a good political briefing in the morning, although you got to, you know, sometimes Joe got to ignore him a little bit. I don't know if he said that, but there's ways you can watch that episode back. That doesn't sound like that he would say something that stupid. I've heard him say similar stupid stuff, but that sounds like something that he wouldn't say. I did hear him say, though, this morning, that he felt that, let's talk about Biden came out aggressively, the Democrats coming out aggressive to make this push for voting rights, and he thought it was a little bit too aggressive in his opinion.
Yeah, I heard that too. What was that about?
Well, that's who he is. So, I mean, that's like you're saying, you know, him slipping in those little things here and there. Well, that's what they do, you know, and I'm not surprised of him. Some things he admits, but some things he doesn't. And, you know, you got to watch. I take all of those people. I watch him. I keep my eye on him. You know, him and Cole. I keep my eye on him to find out, watch what they're saying, because, you know, that's what they'll do. They'll have their agents embedded in, acting like they're for the cause or on the right cause. And when they get an opportunity, they'll act as if they're actually spies in a real war here. You know, a lot of people don't recognize, you know, I think it's spiritual in some sort of scripture. The phrase, come let us reason together. Gentlemen, brothers, come let us reason together. I believe that's what the initial objective of forming the Congress together. Come let us reason together, because it beats us fighting each other and trying to kill each other in every state from state to state. And we need to have, and some of us just want to have a way of life we can try to provide for our family and pursue happiness. So come let us reason together, so we can have a modicum of a reasonable society where people can go to work, try to provide for their family, try to provide for their children. That is the notion, from my perspective, of why we have collective reasoning, why we have government together, why state after state is not going to war with each other, which is what the feeling I get from some of these Republican states. If you looked at any clips of DeSantis' speech yesterday, State of the Union speech in Florida, where he called the last bastion gods, I'm paraphrasing now, of freedom and all this other stuff. If you listen to people in Texas or crazy people like Marjorie Taylor Greene, that these individuals that want to succeed from the union, you know, as if you're going to be a part of America, but you're going to succeed, like what you're going to be like Mexico or Texas is going to work. It's that mentality that seems to go in contrast with the whole notion of the United States. Let us reason together. And so when people clearly, if that's not enough to make these individuals come together, it means you don't get pissed off when you don't get your way. You know, we all lead to the same flag, to these United States. So that means we have these elections, and sometimes if we lose, then we take it out of chin and we all come together, kind of like what we teach our children with our sports, because it's really a reflection of our society. Fair play, two teams, everybody come out equally and have at it. Now, America took a long time to come to even that notion where they allowed black people to even compete on the playing field of physical endeavor with Caucasians. But eventually we got there, and, you know, it is what it is. But it's an equal playing field. And that's kind of our society, I believe, where we send our kids to school, we put them on teams, we teach them teamwork, we drill that in. Our armed services, our teamwork, all for one, one for all. But lo and behold, there's individuals that don't really walk it like they talk it, right? This system that they've set up, until it comes to them losing, then they want to turn tables over and not recognize the rules that they'd agreed on before the contest took place. You know, it's like some high schools that we used to play against in high school, you know, and they couldn't beat you, so they want to start fighting at the end of the game. You know, everybody thinks America is about the politics, but it's really America's high school all over again for all of us, if you think about
it. That's true.
You know, and so when you think about that, then the bottom line is, like, me growing up in terms of the whole racial issue, I guess because I was how I was brought up, I didn't fit the stereotypes that the larger community had of black people, of all black people. And so when we moved into these communities, to the Maplewood, which was a fairly liberal community, it was easy for us to relate or talk to the people. We didn't speak with any particular dialect. The dialect we spoke with was proper English, because my mother was an English teacher. And my father, who was also a college graduate, was not having you speak incorrectly. So I've always felt that all you have to do is talk to people. Once they get to know me, and it's true about America, right? That's why you have some people who are prejudiced. You'll see them at the march. You saw them at June 6th. But they got some black friends that they hang out with. They got one or two black friends they might speak to, you know? So it's about getting people together. It's about the education, which is why the CRT, you know, DeSantis passed a law, wants to pass a law that teachers can be sued in Florida for teaching CRT. Once again, it's a college level course, so it's not going to be taught in the classrooms, in the grade school level classrooms. But this is what they did to slaves years ago. Don't allow them to read. Don't allow them to get an education. I saw on the Push Black, which is, I don't know, Byron, if you get some things from Push Black on Facebook. Mm-hmm. Black is a nonprofit organization, progressive organization that has historical things about black history. And you get it, if you click on it on your Facebook or whatever, then they shoot you different facts, factoids. And there was one today about a guy named, I think, David Walker, an abolitionist. Are you familiar with him, Byron?
The name's real familiar. Did he recently have a birthday?
I don't know. But I think
I saw the name. See, because basically I get pushback stuff. So, right. You know, it's like.
He put out a pamphlet. His pamphlet was outlawed. Voting, against slavery, pro-abolition. And so much so that it was outlawed. If you got caught, you know, reading it, you could be put to death. You know, the whole traditional thing of. You get put to death if you're caught educating black people or educating slaves at the time, or slaves promoting rebellion amongst other slaves. And it reminds me of those days, how these individuals are going so crazy about CRT and they're stirring their people up, and people are coming to these school board meetings and talking about CRT. It's not even taught at the school, grade school level. So that makes me wonder, clearly the people aren't well informed about it, first off.
Well,
secondly,
you mentioned David Walker.
Secondly, I wonder their educational level, these people that want to come to the school board meeting for the board of ed for grade school, and they're going off. I'm really wondering their educational level that they're arguing some of the things that they argue. It makes me wonder. You were going to say, Byron.
I was just going to say, you know, the abolitionist David Walker, a black man, you know, born September 28th, 1785 through June 28th, 1830, but in his pamphlet, and you're right, think about period. We're not even talking about the 1900s. We're still in the 19th century. A black man writing, in essence, saying it's slavery is a sin, and he attacked it on the level of not only the spiritual side of it, but as a sin of slavery for blacks not being able to have the opportunity to even rebel against oppression. Because that, remember, this is a man who lived through Nat Turner. Okay.
Well,
Nat Turner defended the violent rebellion.
Walker defended
Nat Turner's revolt. So this is a man who was a very powerful spokesperson. This is a man who defended Nat Turner. Yes, this is how important this man is. So you're right, then you don't know this history and you do not teach it. How do you expect a person to know the power that they have? You've got to understand and know who your heroes and sheroes are. Otherwise, if you're only fed white history, who are you going to think your heroes and sheroes are going to be? Nobody
right.
else but, you know, I'm sorry, you know, I love all the old movies and heroes and sheroes created there, sure. You know, but where are my heroes? Where is David Walker?
That's exactly. And I just learned about
should
him today.
That's right.
Reading. That was the first time I ever.
Should I not honor him?
You know?
Really.
But this is why they don't want to.
And because that's why I think, that's why, gentlemen, I think what happens on this show, which is kind of a unique blend, we
right.
live in the two most important regions of the country. One is the capital of the world, Washington, D.C. The other one is the financial capital of the world, New York City. And when you're in the Tri-City area of New York or inside the DMV, as we call it here, D.C., Maryland, and Virginia, then you are at the epicenter of the most powerful city ever, and yet we have to succumb to the will of a minority who are trying to keep us from our rights.
Right, right.
And, and I tell you, Byron, that is so bothersome. You know, there are times when I think about that. This whole eastern region, this is why people in the Deep South and the people out west, I mean, when I should say the Midwest, because California and states, you know, buttressing it to a certain extent, you know, they get the big picture. But it's like what's... It, you know, I hate to repeat this because I had gotten into an argument with our last mayor here in New York, de Blasio, about the use of the term flyover states. But very often it's those states that just don't seem to be lockstep with reality. And a lot of it reflects leadership. A lot of it reflects ignorance. And, you know, and it's important that, you know, I think even on a high school level, critical race theory should be introduced so people will understand. It's not enough just to recount stuff that, you know, kids had from the time I was in school that basically doesn't challenge one's thought as to what's going on out here today. How did we arrive at this point, you know?
Right.
And that's the thing. I mean, I really feel that in many instances, if we could resolve that problem, you know, I have met just recently a couple of white professors who are teaching African studies, African American studies at private institutions, colleges, Fordham University, for one. I hope to have this person on pretty soon one of these days. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it just amazes me that we are, it shouldn't be considered unusual, but there are people out there who don't look like us who get it and they want to be nourished, or they have been so impressed by our growth that they, you know, they can't help but feel it. It's just one of those things. I don't understand how people in other parts of the of this country just can't seem to want to embrace and really see what our history has been about. why there's been conflict.
I think it's that they want to know the truth. They're dealing with the truth, and that's the factual truth, the history of our people. But Wayne, let's shift gears a little bit, because you're right there in the city. You mentioned the previous mayor. So what do you think about this heat the current mayor, Eric Adams, is getting? I noticed, the whole situation with his brother. Part of the reason, I read the Griot. I'm reading the Griot, right? You know, the website, the Griot. And
yeah.
I read this sister, Christina Greer, who's a black professor. I've seen her on shows. She's going in on Eric Adams. And this is an opinion piece about the Griot, the website. And the article of the day was, he hired his brother, the nepotism thing. Then I scrolled up a little bit. I saw that she wrote another article. Eric Adams has been elected New York City mayor. Hold on to you. Fasten your seatbelts. So just by the title of it, kind of led me to believe that she might not be. Maybe she was in Maya Wiley's camp. But this is part of the problem that the American people have. His mother's been in office maybe a week or two, and you have a sister that's out there trashing him. Now, I don't, everybody's entitled to their opinion, but this is part of our problem. He's appointed a black woman, female police commissioner. They're mad because he put his brother on his personal security detail. What else would you expect? I mean, for real, I understand all of that stuff, but come on. His personal security detail, he wants to watch his back that he can trust, and a cop too, and African-American, black police, black mayor coming into a city like this at this time in history. Yeah, I'm glad he's got his brother watching his back. Just like, yeah, I'm glad that this black mayor that got elected in New York is a black police officer, because I'm feeling we need to have more black people in positions of authority, like that. And so when I see, I'm reminded of, the Dr. West and Travis trashing Barack as soon as he got in, never seen him say nothing about Donald Trump. It's just, I'm tired of this, we don't have that luxury yet. We don't have that luxury yet. And unless, Wayne, you can answer this better than either one of us can, unless Eric Adams has a type of background where he really is, you really have to be concerned about him in terms of corruption and things like that, and things that would be the worst that you would hope from him. I don't understand why our people, under the guise of, well, he's another mayor, so I have my opinion, and blah, 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 blah. No, you don't. You don't understand what the overall picture is. We're trying to have a revolution for us. So when you want to be fair and all that, the other side ain't fair when they're judging you and yours. So when you're trying to have equity for other motherfuckers who ain't giving you equity, that's a problem for me. I'm part of the drop squad. We formed a company just for motherfuckers just like that need to be deprogrammed and going against the progression of your people. Not saying that Christina's doing that, but I'm just saying it's too many times I've seen that you have a black person that automatically want to jump in and disrespect and down the other person. And that's part of the reason why we keep getting, to me, in my opinion. You go on these last.
No, I hear what you're saying, and I feel your pain, Eric. I mean, I really do. And I don't know if I have the salve for that, but in all honesty, I've known Eric Adams a long time, and he used to come to the state. He used to be on your mother's show from time to time, and the deal is that. I was elated to see what he was able to do and aspire, and I think a lot of this has to do with the alignment of the stars. I mean, New York City was under a lot of crime, unnecessarily so under the previous mayor, my opinion. That guy that comes on CNN every year and they do the New Year's Eve party, I'm not talking about what's his name? Anderson Cooper, but the guy who shares the mic with him. He went off for like 5 minutes on de Blasio. And I hate to say it, but I really feel that a lot of what he did, other than for early education, I think his history is going to be lost. I really think, to a certain extent, but this is not the point. This is not what we're discussing. Tonight we're talking about this transition. And I have a couple of black cops who worked alongside Eric. One is the former chief of police, Bill Chapman, and the only issue that he had with Eric back in the day when they were working, there was already I forgot the exact title of the black police group within the law enforcement community here in New York City. It had well been established going back to the 30s, and Eric didn't like what was going on with that, so he and his brother started another group. And again, you know, there was no reason in Chapman's opinion for the divisiveness, but that happened. The other day, he appointed Phil Banks, and there was a lot of controversy with him. He was a stand-up guy in the police department. Unfortunately, he got caught up in something that, and a friend of ours who worked alongside Eric, this detective, Mark Patterson, I'm going to call his name because he's been out there for quite some time. He's retired now. But Mark had mentioned to me, you know, and it made sense because I thought it was, if anything, much too soon to be bringing up stuff that the New York press corps, you can't even go to the damn urinal without somebody sneaking behind you to find out, well, what shade did your urine come out? And that's about as vulgar as I'll get tonight. But the bottom line is, you know, Phil Banks was cleared of any improprieties. He went into retirement, and then all of a sudden this opportunity came through Eric, and I'm certain his brother must have coached Phil into coming back out of retirement, and they gave him this high position. Actually, he's almost higher than the police commissioner, from what I understand, just hearing it from these people who've worked within the system. He's now deputy commissioner of safety under the police department. In fact, the current police commissioner, the female, Spiel, has to answer to him from the way I get it. But I also feel...
My
only point is that the business of his brother is probably eminently qualified to hold the position of what he's appointing his brother to. The problem is that people look at that and immediately they think that's nepotism. And you know, white folks got away with this for a long time. There's no reason or secret when you look at the history of the police department and why there has been a preponderance of Irish Americans who've led that department for many years from its inception, you know. So, I mean, the deal is sometimes you step out, you do things, and it could be somewhat controversial. And I know there's a there's like an ombudsman office that is evaluating, you know, whether he can actually legally get away with it, because he came out with the premise that the only person he would trust, you know, watching his back would be his brother. But how do you convince others who don't know the relationship between them? Does this mean that if anyone else who's just as qualified should be denied an opportunity to hold that post because your brother, you gave it to your brother? You know, I mean, I love my family, but I don't want to talk about Gilman's tonight either, but I can tell you a whole story about, you know, I mean, it is what it is, gentlemen.
Wayne, the biggest problem Eric has, Adams is going to have, and I wanted to say this last week when we touched upon this lightly, is he's going to have to deal with the Fraternal Order of Police. Now, that's the battle on the police line, because the Fraternal Order of Police is all the white cops. And he's right. There is this break, this schism. And breaking that, because I'm willing to bet you it's not within his family that's questioning whether he can appoint his brother to be one of his bodyguards. It's within the Fraternal Order of Police who are saying, well, he didn't come up through the union ranks. Excuse me?
Oh, yeah. And that's part of it, too. And you know, so he's rocking the system. I mean, I give Eric credit to have the balls to do what he did. But I also think that the timing might have been a little, and this is just me, I would have waited, you know, a minute before, you know, I don't know. It's not like you want to help. and want to make a point, and there's clearly no reason why. His brother worked in the department. His brother stayed,
right,
even after Eric dropped out and retired and went into politics. His brother was still in there, you know?
Yes,
so he's eminently qualified,
right,
you know, but it's an ethical issue.
As long as they could justify, you could justify it. I mean, they can't point to it and say, you know, ethically right, but, you know, if you were to talk about somebody protecting somebody's life and dude feels comfortable with his brother is qualified, and you're seeing technically how it looks optically, then, yeah, other motherfuckers been doing it. Ain't nobody saying that. Trump appointed his kids, you know.
Thank you.
Exactly. Giuliani appointed his son. Giuliani got his son appointed to the Trump administration. My God.
Hold on, B. I think it's a confluence of several different things happening at the same time. The DA and his kind of questionable tactics led some of these people out, right? The situation with Eric and his brother, and also, like you said, the guy that came out of retirement. But with that gentleman, like you said, he was exonerated of any wrongdoing. But just the notion that's what they're going at, because they're not saying that, yeah, this happened and he's exonerated. Just the fact that he was accused, they're trying to say that particular brother is automatically disqualified, which is not the
case.
Yeah,
he's guilty. And that's the New York press. They, you know, they sit on their asses and they,
mm-hmm.
and they'll go up there and talk all sorts of smack. Same crap they used to say to your mother, you know, when Dinkins was running the town. You know, they'll sit there and badger, but they don't come out and fact check. This man
right.
was cleared. It,
right.
You know, and he wasn't given any there were no instances where improprieties were cited. That's it. You want to question relationships? I have questionable relationships with all sorts of people. Doesn't mean that I'm out there doing something criminal.
Well, that's, I mean, getting back to what Byron and what you were saying earlier, B, that it goes all the, on all the time in D.C., and clearly, like we talked about, the president got away with that. I mean, look at all the questionable people. They still,
that's right, see.
So this is what I'm saying, the double standard, right? I mean, you know, it's the double standard
yeah.
about living within this society. And we got about 2.5 minutes. You want to say real quick, B, and then I want us just to touch on what we're watching.
I got some good news to share with you. As of 2 days ago, I got hired by the Negro Ensemble Company to help them reestablish their brand on a special project, and I am excited to be a part of this new focus and maintaining the integrity of one of our iconic theatrical institutions in the Negro Ensemble Company.
Oh, yeah, congratulations.
Congratulations, brother.
Congratulations, man. That is
Thank
a very...
you. There'll be more. There'll be more.
Let me give you the props. People don't know about the institution that is the Negro Ensemble
yes.
Company, and they have not been up to their prominence of the heyday, so I'm glad that you're going to be working with them, the prominence that they deserve, because, you know, that was one of the vehicles, I think, that helped Sydney, as well as the great
yeah.
many other
right.
of our legends.
Stand on the shoulders of our heroes and sheroes. Never forget that, my friend. Yes,
that's your sign-off, B, because we got a minute 12.
That's my sign-off, yes, sir.
There it is.
All right.
A new historian, Byron Saunders. Talk to you again, B.
Peace and love always.
Wayne Gilman, the legendary.
Hey, man. You know, I'm sorry this was so short, and I really enjoyed the show, but just want to, you know, give a shout-out and my blessings, rest in peace, to both M. Toomey and tonight Ronnie Spector, the Queen of Washington Heights. She passed at the age
right.
of 78 tonight.
It
you
is.
Know, one of my idols.
Dude,
I'm a little older than you guys, so.
Thanks, Wayne Gilman. We'll talk to you again, the legendary newsman. Thanks again. Also, too. We want to say, as Bob Saget, Ronnie Spector, and the other person that just flew out of my mind that Wayne just mentioned as well, you know, a lot of history makers are passing. You know, it's kind of, we're coming to an end of an era, the ages. Little cats, we lived through some very legendary people. So we'll be talking to you again. I'm K-Son. This is K-Son of France. A little bit of Bob Marley.